We'll call the meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs, Finance Division to order. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Jenkins.
Here.
Representative Welty.
Here.
Representative Finstad. Representative Doty.
Here.
Representative Faust. Representative Hamilton.
Here.
Representative Hanson.
Here.
Representative Heidgerken. Representative Magnus.
Here.
Representative Olin.
Here.
Representative Otremba.
Yes.
Representative Peterson. Representative Poppy. Representative Szymanski.
All right, members, Representative Welty moves approval of the minutes Wednesday, March 7th. They're in your folder. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Reminder, welcome to the audience members who are here. We have a crowd. Who is this crowd up here sitting in the back two rows? Do we know? Representative Otremba, pull your mic down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These, I have, first of all, one of them is one of my interns, and they are also homeschooled, and some of them are from my district, so welcome to our committee.
All right, very good. Nice to see you at the Capitol. Hope you have a good day. Reminder, we have coffee up here for anyone. Another reminder, if you have a cell phone and it goes off, you owe a dollar to the coffee jar for our committee. If you answer the phone, it's $5. It's the only rule we have in this committee. So a friendly reminder of that. Members, we have a session, I believe, at 11:30. Is that right? So we're going to try and move through these bills best we can. If we don't get to a bill or two at the end, so be it. We'll just move it into the next session tomorrow. But again, we have some out-of-town people and some others here we want to get at when and if we can here to begin with. But let's start her off. Representative Olin is here. Yes, he is.
He's here.
Where's this money?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this unfortunately is my...
Do I have a bill?
Has to be my pet project because of the district I live in.
Excuse me, Representative Olin moves House File 308 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Again, this is a Board of Animal Health request, I believe. So
that is correct.
All right. Please proceed.
Like I was saying, and forgot to move my bill, but sooner or later I'll catch on to right. Anyway, what I have today is the honor or the misfortune, whatever one you want to call it, of bringing a bill that's starts in my district, and hopefully we can put an end to it so it doesn't spread to any other districts. That's the biggest goal on this bill. Bovine TB has unfortunately hit my district twice. We were hoping we took care of it the first time, but it's back again. And hopefully this time, along with another couple companion bills that aren't in front of you at this very moment, between the deer and the cattle, we can actually take care of the problem this time. With me today, I have Bruce Clavin, and I have Dr. Hartman, and I will let them do most of the testifying. Dr. Hartman did some the other day, and I'll let him start.
Very good. Welcome to the committee, Dr. Hartman. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health and the State Veterinarian. I'm here to answer any questions you might have about the bovine tuberculosis situation. I think things are in good order up there right now. We're making good progress with eliminating this disease from the cattle, and as we speak, DNR is making good progress with eliminating the disease from the free-ranging white-tailed deer. The bill that Representative Olin has would provide funding for that effort over the next biennium. We think that that's necessary. I would just draw your attention to that the Board of Animal Health has put a request in through the governor's office that's been approved, so it's in the governor's recommendation. The numbers are similar to what's in this bill, but slightly different. For 2008, the governor's recommendation is for $448,000, and in fiscal year 2009, $363,000. Mr. Chairman, with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
So the the Olin request is just slightly higher.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Clavin. Please introduce yourself, and your interest in this bill would be appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bruce Clavin. I represent the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association. That's the beef cow industry.
just to throw support behind the bill. This is their top issue for the year, is the funding of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Faust.
Quick question on the $408,000. Are we buying the cattle or the herds that have been infected, and is that where a lot of this money is going, or is this for the cost of eradicating the deer, or where is the money actually going for? And I believe it's $408,000 each fiscal year, and so we know, is it three herds so far that are infected? And are we anticipating, if a lot of this money is going for that, are we anticipating the same type of money we need next year for additional herds, or why is it both years if so much of the, if a lot of the money is going to the cattle herds? So if you could answer that. Thank
Dr. Hartman, what are we using the money for?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Faust, the dollars that are coming to the Board of Animal Health are strictly for cattle. We don't deal with free-ranging white-tailed deer. DNR does. So any money that would go to DNR would be for the free-ranging animals. As far as paying for the infected herds, we've had seven infected herds now, and that has come at a cost of depopulating those herds of about $3.5 million. That money has all been paid for by the federal government. So the federal government has provided indemnity to depopulate all the infected herds we've dealt with so far. The funding that the state is looking at providing to the Board of Animal Health would be for employees, for trucks, for chutes. We found up in that part of the state it gets pretty cold in January, and so we've rented a facility that allows us to take these chutes in after they've been used on a farm, thaw them out and clean them off before we go to the next farm. So costs like that. In addition to that, we're paying private practitioners in that area, veterinarians, to do testing for the Board of Animal Health. We don't have enough employees to do all the testing that's required up there, so we're paying them. So there are, the costs are for the running of the TB testing operation.
Maybe I can make one comment.
Representative Olin, can you confirm that it gets cold in Thief River Falls in the winter?
I can confirm it gets cold up there. I can also confirm that there is another bill floating around dealing with the deer that would be an environment.
Right, and we've seen that one, and there's another one on your schedule here from Representative Saylor, I believe, later on if we get to it also, which talks about some of this. Representative Hamilton.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Olin, for bringing this bill forward. You know, this is a serious and unfortunate issue that we're discussing here, and like you said, it's present in your area. You know it well, but it does affect the entire state. And I just want one simple question. Is this enough money to truly be effective?
Representative Olin or either of your two witnesses?
Well, I'll let them answer, too. But in my mind, it's a guesstimate at best. I don't know if it's enough, to be honest or not. They can answer.
Dr. Hartman?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, it was the request that we put, the Board of Animal Health put through the governor's office. So it was fully funded. It was our best guess at the time that we put it through that would be enough money. I still believe with where we're at today, it's enough money to get us through what we need to do. It's a situation that changes daily, though. We now know that we have a significant infection in a confined area in the deer. That's a bigger problem than having a problem in cattle. So we can deal with that easier than if we had it in the deer. So could my projections be off as we move along? Yes. But I would still maintain that it's enough funding at this point to provide us what we need to move ahead.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you for coming. Representative Olin with this. We certainly will hold this and lay it over and consider it for our omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Today, House File 710 proposes to fund sustainable agriculture demonstration grants through the Commissioner of Agriculture. No grant can exceed $25,000.
Excuse me, Representative Peterson. Representative Peterson moves his bill before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You don't want this running alone, right?
I would like it running with your support.
Thank you.
There's people up here today, and I think you want to. We're at that time of session where we like to move quickly, so I've tried this approach in the past with an open assistant commissioner position at the Department of Ag that wasn't filled, has since been filled, I believe that's correct to say, and would look for the chair's suggestion and recommendations on where the money may or may not come from. And with that, I'll open it up to those who are with me today, starting with Tom Peterson from the Minnesota Farmers Union.
Mr. Peterson, welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. I think many of you are familiar. I'm Tom Peterson with the Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm here to support House File, I hope it's 710, yeah, which would appropriate $250,000 for sustainable ag demonstration grants. Over the years, our members have participated in the grants, utilized the information provided by the grants through the Green Book, and I don't know if you guys have copies of them. I think most of you have seen the Green Books, and they've been very helpful. The other part that's very helpful for our members is the on-farm field day demonstrations, which the farmers can actually go out and participate. We've been concerned in the past years in the cutbacks and the recent fundings. On page 6 of the current Green Book is kind of a history of the funding. It's been as high as $280,000, and it's currently about $80,000 in funding right now.
Representative Peterson, it's $80,000 per year. Is that what through the department is what they're currently getting?
That's what they're, Mr. Chair. That's what they're currently getting.
And that's what's been recommended in the governor's budget?
Mr. Chair, I believe so.
Okay.
Yes, and that's in the baseline budget of the governor's budget.
Right.
But in 2002, for example, it was $200,000. The department, I visited with them a little bit, too, that they say that about a quarter to a half of the grants are filled, so there definitely is, you know, so if we're going to increase the appropriation, are there people that didn't get their grants filled, or is there opportunities? And the answer to that is yes. The other answer I'd say is we're talking a lot about cellulose and ethanol and switchgrass and energy here at the Capitol this year. These Green Book programs would be very good. I also visited with the department today, too, where they told me that one of the possible applicants this year is for, like, on-farm biodiesel demonstration grant, which I can tell you a lot of our members are interested in and would find very helpful. So it's a good program. It's been around for 20 years, and I urge you to put some more money into it. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Riddle from rural Winona. I'm the organic outreach coordinator with the University of Minnesota. I've been not speaking on behalf of the university here, but I do want to call to your attention that in your packets that you picked up today, there are two handouts. One is just a brochure about the university's organic ecology program, and then the other is a brand new, hot off the press, Minnesota Guide to Organic Certification. So I just wanted to take the opportunity, since I'd come up here today, to give you copies of those, and I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I'm really here today to speak in support of House File 710 first. The on-farm demonstration grant program. One thing that, you know, I do a lot of outreach and workshops, but farmers really learn best from other farmers. I think that's pretty well established, and this program really provides funding to farmers to try new practices on their farm, things that they would like to do. They want to find out if they work or not. And this is a way that they can try these new practices, a little bit of seed money to help them. And what's really, I think, critical about this program and why it's been so successful is in order to receive money, the farmers have to do field days. So they have to share their information with other farmers. And then they also have to write reports and work with cooperators like extension agents or faculty or people from MDA to make sure that they're really doing some valid research with the demonstration grants, and then they go into the Green Books like Tom just mentioned. And you know, I have both the 2006 Green Book and the 2005 here with me today, and if you notice, the 2006 is about half the size of 2005, and that's heading in the wrong direction. There's a tremendous need for this. You know, things like season extension, raising more produce here in Minnesota, alternative livestock methods, grazing, all these things where there's tremendous consumer demand, and farmers just need a little bit of support from the state to help do the research and spread that information.
Mr. Riddle, do you know what the average size of a grant might be out there?
Overall? Yeah, around $8,000 is what the farmers have received. Yeah. And that table that Mr. Peterson referred to on page 6 gives the breakdown of the total funding and then the average grant size over the years.
Okay. Mr. Sobieski, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair. Sobieski's a town.
Huh?
Sobieski's a town by Little Falls.
Sobieski. Sobosinski.
There we go.
From Obaso.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the Land Stewardship Project. I am Paul Sobosinski. And the way you always remember my name is go Sobo, and we go, and what we do a little bit as Polish people, we sin a little bit, and hopefully we ski our way onto heaven after that. So that's
okay.
All. But anyway, thank you again for the opportunity to testify. I want to be brief. We support this bill moving forward. We look at this bill as a complement to, for example, one of the pieces we've been working on this session is also funding at the University of Minnesota to step up the capacity to get more research in terms of agriculture. And this particular bill steps up the capacity of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture to encourage more on-farm research. We have excellent staff there, and Meg Monohan and Mary Hanks, who are already there, so we have the staff and the ability to move forward. We just need to put some more resources and get us back to where we were back a number of years ago in terms of resources and funding. So, again, thank you for the opportunity to testify.
To any of the witnesses, the geographic location of these projects, is it pretty much spread throughout the state, or do we have holes? Knowing that there's agriculture in northeast, northwest, Representative Olin, and southwest, Representative Magnus, and where are we seeing these projects? Are they, do they tend to be clustered more in the southern part of the state due to resources, or are they? Are you working with extension people up north? Just give us a little idea on that over the last few years, if you know.
Mr. Chairman, members, I visited with the department about this too, and they tell me it's, you know, they try to base it geographically as much as possible. And there's also, if you look in the Green Book, I don't know if you have copies of them with
you. We do not.
We have a lot of them have some of the past ones and where they're located. But, yeah, they do definitely try to, you know, disperse them across the state.
And I think that's important to the future of this project and others, that we, whether it's energy projects or sustainable, there are farmers and producers all across the state that should benefit from things we do with state dollars. So I think that's important. Any questions, members? Representative Hamilton?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Peterson. You know, this is organics is a $2 billion industry, I believe, in the state of Minnesota. And I believe that more and more farmers or investors are taking a serious look at this. And so I think as far as funding this information, I thank you for bringing this forth, and I thank you for the testifiers. And like I said, a lot of people are watching this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hamilton.
Representative Peterson, any final? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Peterson. Well, one of the holes would be in the metro area, but that's where some of the consumers are. So I would just encourage folks, you know, I think my constituents, a number of them go to the farmers markets. It might be good to have a few green books at the farmers market or some of the promotional materials just to make people aware of what's happening, and I think that most people would be very supportive of these efforts and knowing what the state is doing. So a little promotion might help with the marketing and make people aware and build in some more support for the program.
Which begs the question, Representative Peterson or Mr. Riddle or the department, is this money also used to print the green books, or is that some other pot of money?
Mr. Chair, I think if you look, I believe that if the appropriation was $80,000, this about $70,000 were in grants and about $10,000 was to print the books.
$10,000 to print.
Yeah, okay. And so, yeah.
All right. Do you know how many copies that got us?
I don't.
All right. We'll get that later from the department. Just curious. All right. Any other questions? Thank you, then. House File 710 will be laid over for possible consideration of the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Peterson and witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Doty.
But thank you.
Boy, it looks almost the same as.
Mr. Chairman, right. I want to know, is right. Given that we all know the only change, is this an improvement?
We will take a vote later on that.
Very judicious.
Representative Doty moves House File 846 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please proceed.
Very quickly before we do that, Mr. Chairman, thank you for bringing up Sobieski earlier. It would be a magnificent field trip for this Ag Committee next fall on Sobieski Days. They consume parts of animals there that you did not think that was possible. And they are good.
All right.
To the bill. In my district, there are many, many small farms. Organic farming is a wonderful opportunity for these people to keep those family farms. And we have federal legislation that's spotty at best to help this. We think the state of Minnesota would be very well served to send a message that we are behind organics and everything that can do. With that, I have testifiers here that will explain specifics of the bill.
All right.
Proceed. Mr. Chairman, Tom Peterson again from Farmers Union. I'll be very brief. Here to support the cost share program that we've had in the state for a number of years. We think it's a good investment, and it's helped make Minnesota a leader in organics. I think you heard some of the testimony from the department and the policy committee, many of you, that we're number one in soybeans and we're near the leaderboard in many categories. And I've had a chance to visit with many of our organic farmers in the last couple of weeks, including our Candy Ojai County president, who actually lives in Representative Heigerkin's district, Donnell Williamson, who raises corn and beans. And he told me that the cost share has been very helpful to him and very urges the committee's support. But he also is not just to prove that he's organic, but he also, and Mr. Riddle maybe knows how this works better, he certifies two to sell in Japan for his soybeans, so he has to pay an extra premium. Many of our producers tell us they run from several hundred dollars for cost share to several thousand dollars if you're raising also, if you have a diversified operation, maybe raising crops and livestock, so you have to certify both. Also, Representative Doty mentioned the federal farm bill, and they are writing in the 2007 farm bill, and we hope to have a cost share type program in there. But the federal government has the same problem we have many times, where they may put it in the farm bill, but then it's subject to unallotments and different things. So as Representative Doty said, that funding is spotty and inconsistent and underfunded. So this bill does also allow the commissioner some flexibility towards the end of the bill. If you read, if perhaps we do have lots of federal cost share dollars and we can use this money to promote organic agriculture in other ways. Finally, I'd mention that I do serve as chairman of the state organic task force appointed by Commissioner Hugesson that advises Commissioner Hugesson on organic agriculture. And we did recommend raising it, not quite to this level, but raising it to the original bill, which was $160,000, because we do see a strong need for it, and it has been an effective tool. Thank you.
Mr. Peterson, do you know what the request is in the baseline budget for this year?
Mr. Chairman, members, and I forget, it's either 35 or 50,000. So it has been 50.
Was it? It's 50 with 35 for cost share and 15 for administration.
Right. That's correct. Yeah.
Do you know, or does anyone else know? 35,000 cost share requested. Do you know the amount that was requested for monies last year? Were we short? Were we over? Where are we at? I mean, going from 50,000 to 275 is a big jump. Mm-hmm. Is there that much need? Do we get that many applications that are not processed every year in the department?
Mr. Chairman, members, I do know that...
And if you don't know that, we'll bring the department
up. And maybe you want to do that, but I do know there's a need, and that's why we looked at that with the commissioner. Remember, too, that it's not just the farmers, it's also the person who sell, process, or package agricultural products. And there is, I think, over 500 farmers and 100 in some of the other categories that fit that bill. And you can do the math. If it was a $200 cost share, how many farms that doesn't cover. But I do know that some farmers didn't get their cost shares.
We'll ask the department to come up when you all are done.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Riddle from Winona, and also here speaking in support of House File 846, Organic Certification Cost Share. And, you know, Minnesota initiated this program back in 1998, the first in the nation, with leadership of Senator Janet Johnson back then. And that's become a model for the country. And it was included in 2002 Farm Bill, but with inadequate funds. And so farmers did qualify for the federal dollars for a few years and then drop back to the state program. But the state program is very modest in only providing up to $200 per farm per year, or two-thirds the cost of certification. And as Meg Moynihan from the department testified before the policy committee, the current average cost of certification is around $900 per farm per year. And it's not a one-time deal. This is an annual expense that a certified organic farmer has to pay in order to show that they're meeting, you know, complying with all of the strict environmental standards that are required for organic. Even with a $500 cost share, which we're calling for changing the state rules to go from $200 to $500, that still means the farmer's paying out of their pocket $400 on average per year. And so, you know, I see this not as a production subsidy by any means, but really providing some regulatory relief. And I compare this program to the pesticide applicator program, the licensing program, which I think is a very good program. But there, the curriculum, the training sessions, the materials, and everything are provided, and then a producer has to pay to take the test. I don't know what it is now, but it used to be $25 for a three-year license. That's some regulatory commitment by that producer to get that license. But here we're looking at organic farmers, even with a cost share, paying around $400 per farm to be able to meet those organic requirements. So I think it's certainly a good investment, and there have been farms that have not been that have been turned away when they've submitted their applications under the current very modest state program. And you know, there's a good chance this may be in the Farm Bill, but we can't guarantee that. And then, like Mr. Peterson said, even if it is, it may not receive adequate funding. And if it does, this bill accounts for that, so a producer could not get both federal and state dollars, and then those state dollars could be redirected to some transition assistance or other information education activities. Thank you.
Gentleman from Redwood County.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Sobczynski. I appreciate the opportunity to testify again on behalf of the Land Stewardship Project. We're in support of this. A number of sustainable ag organizations in the state are in support of this. We look at this piece as helping meet the growing industry, organic industry demand for the consumer demand, and that this helps us step up to the plate to do that. Thank you.
Okay. If we can get the department to come up, one of you gentlemen will move and allow her to sneak in. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name, for the record, is Meg Moynihan, and I serve as the Organic and Diversification Specialist for the Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chairman, you inquired a few minutes ago whether we have enough funds currently to meet the demand for organic certification cost share. I can tell you that last year we did not. Federal funds were not available to the agency. We received 206 applications for cost share. I do not have with me at the moment how many of those were denied. I didn't pick up a copy of our legislative report, a full copy, before I left this morning. I certainly could provide that information to you directly this afternoon. My colleague has a copy.
If you can find it quick.
If you can find it quickly.
Cost share. Yes, Mr. Chairman. We dispersed $35,000 to 178 growers. We had 206 applications. And I would also add that as soon as we reached our limit of funding, I contacted the farmers that I suspected would apply and let them know that we were out of funds so that they didn't waste their time assembling an application and sending it to us. So there I believe there would have been more applications than the 206 that we received.
Do you have historic numbers when maybe it was higher? You don't have to provide it now, but if you could give me an idea of what you expect for applications, assuming money was no object.
Assuming money was no object, Mr. Chairman, I would anticipate approximately 50% of the growers in the state would apply, as well as 50% of the processors and handlers. And under the current current rules of the program, the state rules, only farmers are eligible for this payment. Under the bill that Representative Doty has put forward, all the ancillary support infrastructure, processors, distributors, other supporting, industry and infrastructure that also was required to be certified would qualify for payments.
So 50% of the farmers applied, how many is that? How many would that be?
That would be approximately 250 at this point. We have slightly over 500 farmers in the country.
And how do you process now? Is it first come, first serve, or do you have a way of filtering through when they come in and you wait a few months? And do I need to postmark right away after a certain date and hope and pray that I'm the first on your desk? Or how do we 206 application, 176 got processed. How did we go about that?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we processed them in postmark order. Last time we received them, we opened the program in August. The due date was November 15th, and we were very clear in the application that these would be processed on a first-come, first-served basis.
Now, out of the request, 50, let's, we heard from Mr. Riddle that 50,000 requested by the governor, 35,000 that is cost share, 15,000 is administration. So the 35,000 is going to the actual licensing fees for the federal government, is that right? Or I'm trying to understand the breakdown there. And then what do you do as far as administering the program? How are we certifying or administering, or are we doing any of that, or is this just a process?
Mr. Chairman, the payments that the farmers and the processors make are to accredited certifying agencies that the USDA has empowered to certify on its behalf. Those fees vary from agency to agency, and when an application comes to our office, we check the certification status of the operation to ensure that they are currently a farm that has valid certification, and the costs associated with that, which could be application costs, inspection fees, review fees, and also some of the agencies charge a fraction of a percentage on the volume, not on the volume, of on the value of organic products sold, so that smaller operations have smaller fees than operations that might be doing a bigger business in organic.
As the volume of applications that come in and our funding goes up, does the administration portion of that go down then? Right now, if he's correct, and you can either affirm or not, 30% of the 50,000 that's requested, 30% is admin fees. So if that request, if we funded 100 or 150 or 275,000, so basically we were taking care of all that came in, would that mean does your costs go down with the volume that comes up?
Mr. Chairman, they do go down. As the longer we have run this program and the more efficient that we've become at it, the costs have decreased, yes.
Okay. Any questions, members? Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to that same line of questioning, but in the certifying agencies themselves, as we increase the numbers of farms being certified, are we going to see an economy of scale as such in the certifying agency approach?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Shemansky, I wonder if I might ask my colleague Jim Riddle to address that question, as he's very involved with the inspection procedures.
Mr. Riddle.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative. Unfortunately, the certification agencies are looking at a huge increase in the cost of their accreditation by USDA. USDA auditors are now going to be sending two people at $106 an hour for everything they do, and so certifiers are looking at the increase in their own accreditation going from what's been several thousand dollars, and they're just now getting their estimates ranging from $12,000 to $15,000 a year. So, you know, they're looking at some significant increases, and they exist as a service sector. They have to pass those costs on to the people that they certify. So, I don't anticipate certification fees going down in the short term, even though more and more farmers and processors are choosing to get certified.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, thank you. Representative Doty, we will, House File 846 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I don't have any testifiers, and I'll try to be brief.
Representative Hansen moves House File 769. And you want to go over to Representative Rukavina's committee with this?
Well, as you and I discussed last evening, Mr. Junkie,
I don't think we had any resolve to my discussion, though. So
I presented this bill in Representative Mahoney's committee, which apparently he never had it.
That's correct.
So about 3 weeks ago, I testified on it. So,
well, we will we'll move it over to Rukavina's committee for now and let you hang out over there, since that's the way it's written up. And certainly members and others, if we think there's pieces of this that are appropriate for our bill, we'll continue to hold the actual bill in our folder and look at it. But I think it'll give you a better chance to be in both committees, frankly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So the motion is 769 with recommendation to pass and be re-referred over to Higher Ed Finance.
And to the bill, members have heard a lot of testimony and bills relating to cellulosic ethanol and talking about native plant efforts. What this does is looks at providing some basic research. A lot of the research that has been done on native plants has been in small plots. We don't have a lot of basic yield data. We don't know some of the response to nutrient management, plant breeding, pest management, yield and viability. We have a very diverse state going from one corner to the other. So I put together 769 and looking at trying to get some basic research going that would help provide some information when we get to production scale. So, and then I have a technical advisory committee that would work with the various stakeholders on such research. So I think this meshes well with some of the other bills we've heard and that are being heard in other committees.
Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to offer an oral amendment.
Okay.
Line 1.9, after viability, put a comma and DDGs. And we've had that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Heigerken, maybe you want to say dried distiller grains, because not everyone in the world knows what DDGs are.
Okay.
So we'll move the and over there, too. Would the council repeat the amendment?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the amendment would be on page 1, line 9, before the period, insert and dried distiller's grains.
And I assume we'll delete the "and" before viability.
No, that's what I tried.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Representative Hygerkin, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if we're going to have this in the right order. Representative Hamilton, if you would... is Dick going to take care of it? So my problem is I'm more concerned about the wet plants, of getting more research done there than on the dried end of it. The problem that we're having with our ethanol plants and the resistance to ethanol has been the cost of creating ethanol. And right now, if you put a plant up, where I'm on a search committee with five other people putting a plant up in Stearns County. If we do a wet plant, we cut our natural our natural gas cost down in half, from $30 million to $15 million. And the reason a lot of these plants are not going wet, we have some differences, not necessarily with the University of Minnesota, but there has not been enough research done on that end of it. And I think that's a component of ethanol that we're forgetting about. I think it would... we need far more research on that on the DDGs, often referred to, because it doesn't specify just the dried end of it. But I know that within the pork industry, Representative Hamilton can allude to the problem that they have with pork, and if he would just comment a little bit on the research that's done within the pork industry on the DDGs.
Representative Hamilton, to the Hygerkin Amendment.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond.
Representative Hansen, the author, first.
I think, Representative Hygerkin, you're confusing plants. I'm talking about vegetative plants in the title, native plant research, rather than ethanol production plants. So I actually think that your amendment is really doesn't fit in well with the bill. And, I mean, Representative Hamilton and you can talk about ethanol production plants, but what this bill is looking at is basic agronomic research on native plants, vegetation. And so I would encourage members to vote against the amendment, and I would encourage Representative Hygerkin to maybe drop in a bill to do research on DDGs and wet plants production, and I would be happy to co-sign such a bill with you.
Representative Hygerkin.
I'm going to renew my motion to keep DDGs in there. I think that we need, as the Commissioner Hugesson had mentioned in his testimony, that there has not been a whole lot of research done on DDGs, not to the extent that there should have been done. And I think we have to push it someplace. We've got to push it, and I see this as an opportunity of $1 million is not a small peanut. We can do a lot in research. Again, Representative Hamilton, if you would just refer to the problems we're having within the pork industry.
Representative Hamilton.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hygerkin. Hygerkin. I always put an extra syllable in there. So, just take a look at this. You're talking about the basic research, native plants, plant breeding, nutrient management, pest management, yield viability. And basically, this is going one step further. So you have it from start to finish. And Representative Hygerkin is talking about dried distiller grains, but he's... Maybe we just drop the dried piece on that and have distiller grades, period. So, again, it's from start to finish on the appropriations and the research. You know, he alluded to the pork industry, and just I'm in the swine industry. We're running about, probably about 10% dried distiller grains. So we've done in-house research, and we know what levels we can actually take that up to. If you get too high, then all of a sudden you're affecting meat quality. And so there does need to be additional research done on distiller grains and these byproducts from the ethanol plants. And all the investors, every interested party will benefit from that, from the ethanol plants to livestock producers. So, again, I do see where this could fit on the research side of things, going from the plant, the actual plant, all the way to the byproduct. So I would support Hygerkin's amendment.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author of the amendment, and then also to Representative Hamilton. I'm just wondering if you think it would be wise to change it to and after the comma and to change it to byproducts instead, because as we're looking at this, we may have native grasses that we're going to be using where we don't necessarily use the seed. or we might not have a seed byproduct afterward, but we might have other byproducts that they can market. And so I think if you keep it more vague, then it may fit in with this. And I'm just wondering if you'd be at all willing to accept that as an amendment to your amendment.
Representative Heigerken, how about production byproducts?
Mr. Chair, I still would like to hold with my amendment because if you get into byproduct, you could be talking about the byproduct native plants, etc. My issue is that we have not done proper research with DDGs, and I think we need to bring that, and not trying to be vague, just bring that issue forth, and I think it's very important. It's something that's been holding back the ethanol support in the fact that there's still the argument out there that it's costing us more to make ethanol than what we're getting out of it. Well, this is one way of doing it, is getting these plants from firing up with coal or natural gas, cutting it down into half, and using the wet for livestock and we're not all. And I think we need more money there, and this is an avenue where at least we can get something that would pertain to DDGs.
Representative Finstead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Hansen's point about the, you know, specificness of this bill, as you read through it, you change one word, and it would definitely encompass everything we're talking about. On line 1.8, you have agronomic research on native plants. You could just change it to agricultural research. And then his amendment would make a lot more sense versus the specificness of the bill in its current form. So in the spirit of bipartisan cooperation, I think we all could agree on that. I don't know why we couldn't. It seems like all the interests of this committee and the concerns would be covered then.
Mr. Hansen, the chair will move to amend the amendment. And what I'd like to do is delete dried and just put distiller grains. After distiller grains, put and other biofuel production byproducts. Now we have distiller grains and anything else that comes from the production of our new cellulosic ethanol. And hopefully that'll cover the whole thing, the gamut, like Representative Hamilton had. So does council have that amendment? And I would support that amendment then. Representative Hansen. Do you support the chair and Representative Heigerken's amendment?
Mr. Chair, I would support the chair. I would just like to say I'm discouraged by what appears to be a number of folks raising issues without talking to the author of the bill and bringing up a committee without discussing it with me first. And I believe attempting to change the intent of the bill. I think that the chair has made a good effort in trying to reach a compromise, and I would support that.
Okay. Any questions to the amendment? To the amendment to the amendment, or would you incorporate that?
I will incorporate that.
Representative Heigerken incorporates my amendment to the Heigerken amendment. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. To the bill, Representative Hansen.
I would ask for your support for the bill as amended.
All right. Any other questions? Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 769 be recommended to pass, referred to Committee on Higher Ed Finance as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment. Bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Otremba. Representative Otremba, can we put Sailor up quick? Representative Sailor is here. She passed some money over here to the committee administrator, and she gets to go. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I don't know how that works. I don't know how you get switched around on agendas. I've tried for years to do that, and no one ever listens to me. So, Representative Sailor, welcome to the committee. And Representative Olin moves at House File 884. Or no, House File 104 be recommended to, you want this for consideration in the omnibus bill, Representative Sailor?
That's correct.
All right. Representative Olin moves House File 104 for consideration in the omnibus bill. Welcome, Representative Sailor. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here with this bill before us because of a constituent that raised a concern to me. This is having to do with bovine tuberculosis up in northwestern Minnesota. And this bill has a very limited scope, and as I understand it as well, Representative Olin is carrying another bill that now does address this as well. I started this earlier because there was no other bill addressing this particular situation. But it's just to bring some outdated state statute language up to more accurately reflect current market situations. And this came about when one of my constituents had his herd of cattle tested for the bovine TB under the Board of Animal Health's statewide testing program. When the seven northwestern Minnesota cattle herds tested positive for the bovine TB. Two of his cows showed up as false positives or suspect and were subsequently placed under quarantine for 60 days at the farm, and this is what caused him a consternation. Because his cattle were not in what was called the trace-in and trace-out herds, the original seven herds, he was not eligible for federal USDA reimbursement funds. Normally, the federal funds are available for indemnity when individual cattle or herds are required to be depopulated, which is generally up to about $3,000 per head. And when the funds aren't available, this bill would amend the Minnesota statutes to allow the state to pay an appraised value for cattle, where owners would be reimbursed the appraised value of the living animal minus net salvage. This basically just addresses old language whereby a grade animal would be worth $37.50 and a purebred $75, and that's old language that has long since, you know, way below market value. And originally my constituent was not eligible for the federal reimbursement, although later they did add him to the program. So he would not be looking for any state money because he was incorporated into the federal program. But my concern just remained that we had old archaic language on the books, and the intent was to change that for future considerations if this comes up again. And at this time, there are no claims against the state that apply. Again, it's more a language cleanup. And I believe that Dr. Bill Hartman will also be able to speak on this issue.
Dr. Hartman, can you talk about the claims process for us and kind of walk us through whether this language is no longer needed? There is a fiscal note, members, in your file for $100,000 per year on this.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Bill Hartman. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Animal Health and the State Veterinarian. The situation that arose is the federal government has paid all indemnity on all animals that have been found in these infected herds. I talked about that earlier. That's been about $3.5 million, as well as exposed cattle that were in those infected herds but then got sold to other herds. So they've covered that. In addition to that, when we're doing TB testing in the statewide surveillance, sometimes we do a test, a screening test, and that test will tell us whether we need to do a follow-up test. So it's either negative or the animal responds to this injection. If they respond to the injection, we follow it up with what we call a comparative cervical test. This test has three results: negative and you're done, suspect, in which case I'll talk about that in a minute, or reactor. If it's a reactor animal, the federal government does pay indemnity on those. The issue was these suspect animals that weren't part of the investigation but were part of the statewide surveillance. The early indications I got from USDA was that they were not willing to pay for those animals, and so we looked at paying them with state dollars, and you can see that the language is probably from the first time we got rid of this disease in Minnesota as opposed to current values. The owners do have an option to wait for 60 days on those suspects and retest them, and if they test negative on the second test, they can keep the animal. If they test suspect or reactor on the second test, then the federal government will pay indemnity at that point. The problem it created is there were people who couldn't, during that period of time, their herd's under quarantine. So there was a two-month period of time when they had to be under quarantine, couldn't sell any animals, and that created a problem. We've since solved the problem. The federal government has agreed to pay indemnity on these animals. Now, whether they'll continue to that permanently or not, I don't know. I think it's a good idea to clean up this indemnity language. It's old language that should be fixed. There is another bill that's recently been introduced, House File 1955, that is agency language that we looked at doing the similar sort of thing. In addition to that, it does a few other things. One of the other things it does is we have rules on bovine tuberculosis, and those rules are also out of date, so it would delete those rules. And what it would provide for is that we would adopt as rules the uniform methods and rules that USDA has that allows us to be a tuberculosis-free state. And since we have to follow those rules to be a free state anyway, it makes sense to incorporate them in our rules.
Mr. Hartman, the $100,000, is that included then in your request that you are coming forth, or is this in addition since it's your fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, that $100,000 is not included in any request the Board of Animal Health has. It is that fiscal note. It could be from anywhere from zero to $100,000, depending on whether there's any indemnity to be paid. The Board of Animal Health used to have a fund for indemnity. I think we got $10,000 or $20,000 per year in our budget for indemnity. That was dropped quite a while ago. We currently don't have any specific funding for indemnity, and what I told Representative Saylor is in our current budget we can handle a few cows. You know, if we get a cow here or there that needs to be indemnified, we can manage that within the current budget. But this $100,000, where that comes from, is that's about what it's costing USDA a year now to fund this indemnity. So if USDA stopped paying it and we needed to be paying it, then that's the what we're projecting would be the maximum that we would need to be able to fund that.
Okay. Any questions, members? Seeing none. Thank you for coming, Representative Saylor. House File 104 will be laid over for possible consideration in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Otremba. Welcome to the committee. Representative Otremba moves House File 884 to the table for possible consideration in the omnibus bill. Representative Otremba.
Thank you. Did you move it? I did.
You moved it.
Okay. Thanks.
We all heard you.
Thank you.
I just repeated your motion.
Thank you. Today we are... many of you have seen the MILC board in front of us already, so I'll just be brief. It was established in 1997, and this bill provides $1 million over the next budget cycle. What they advise is the governor and the legislature relating to the agricultural education in Minnesota. They administer grant programs to secondary and post-secondary agricultural education, and they operate the Minnesota Center for Agricultural Education. So I'm going to let my testifiers tell you more about it.
And to the testifiers, we do know about MILC as far as the policy, but we're interested in the funding here. And I guess if you can focus on that, I know a lot of this money in the past came from the University of Minnesota, and now we're making a request here with the department. So if you can focus on that and why the change and what's going on with the funding of that so we have an understanding.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with the Minnesota Association of Ag Educators and have been involved with MILC since its inception. Mr. Chairman, I maybe should give a little background on how Meal C was created, because it was created in the Ag Committee in the state legislature in 1997, which is one of the reasons it's kind of back here at this point with regard to funding. In 1997, there was a special subcommittee that was put together that was both a joint House and Senate committee of the Agriculture Committee to look at agricultural education. At that time, there had been a decline in agricultural education of significance in Minnesota. The University of Minnesota at that point only had about 6 graduates, and we were losing ag programs across the state, not because they weren't wanted, but because there was nobody to teach them. And so when the Joint House and Senate Committee got together, they looked at what could be done to try and reinvigorate agricultural education in the state. And at the time, quite frankly, it was a bit of an orphan, and it's a problem that we still have today in this sense. Ag education crosses many lines. It includes agricultural literacy that you've traditionally funded in the Department of Agriculture. It includes high school programs that are in part funded through the Department of Education. It includes farm business management programs that are through the MINSCU system and general College of Agricultural programs at the University of Minnesota. Because of that, there's no single fiscal identity, I guess I would say, for it. And that's why we have looked at agriculture. When the original legislation was put together, it does require that the chairman of the Ag Committee in the House and the chairman of the Ag Committee in the Senate be on the board. And that is another connection to this particular committee. Initially, the vision that was first started was to look at about a $6 million, I know this was just a vision, but it was to look at about a $6 million appropriation copied on what had been done in the state of Illinois. The initial appropriation that was put forth for this area was $1 million, and it was included in the Ag Special at the University of Minnesota.
Per year or per biennium?
Per biennium.
Okay.
There were further negotiations because part of it was the first task at hand was to reinvigorate the Ag Ed Department at the university. At that time, they only had a half-time teaching position in the Ag Ed Department, and as I said, they were down to about 6 graduates. Today they have 4 teaching positions, and they're up to, I think they have 130 approximately people in the system for graduation. So it has been a success in that sense. But at that time, when it first started in 1997, there were negotiations that took place with the university. Meal C is not a part of the University of Minnesota. It is a standalone board. Okay. But it is housed at the University of Minnesota. And at the time, the University of Minnesota offered to give Meal C housing without pay as such. They offered a free place for Meal C to be. In addition to that, it worked with the Ag Ed Department, which is funded through the university. But there were negotiations, and those negotiations basically said that of the $1 million that $700,000 would go to the Ag Ed Department to help reinvigorate that, and $300,000 would be used for other operations of Meal C. Since that time, the university has basically incorporated that $700,000 into its general budget out of the Ag Special. It's still part of the Ag Special, but it's for the Ag Ed Department. In addition to that, the $300,000 has been charged, for instance, the internal revenue sharing that the university incorporated over the years and so forth. So since 1997, we started with $300,000 for the Meal C operations itself, and we are now down to $260,000 approximately after the university taxes Meal C for part of its deal. And then on top of that, pays for office space and so forth. I think some of that offer that originally started out has been gone, and they're now paying for office space and so forth. So we've had a history of a lot of years with absolutely no increase, and probably the only kind of quasi-agency that exists here that actually has decreased. So we came back trying to look back at that original vision. Again, originally, the original intent was to look at about a $6 million project over time, with $1 million put up front, and then the idea was that year after year there would be additional funds, like most other agencies, that would come into Meal C and be used for ag education purposes. But as I stated, that has not occurred. So we're trying to make a little catch-up here.
when you look at the kinds of things that MILC has done, first of all, it did reinvigorate the Ag Ed Department. Secondly, it created, for instance, AFSA, the Agricultural Academy of Food Sciences. It has worked on a lot of curriculum changes, and I think in your packs you have got, for instance, one of them on natural resources. Part of the education system in this state has basically been to go towards higher academic standards with regard to math and science and so forth. One of the things that we did through MILC was we took ag programs, and this is the first of about four different subject areas that we're dealing with that took the standards and benchmarks and everything that are required by our state graduation requirements and incorporated ag programs into that. We want to continue in that area. One of the other areas that we had, and I guess one of the things I'd like to point out to you is that MILC is a problem-solving entity. And these problems change on a yearly basis as to what is the problem in ag education. For instance, the first problem they dealt with was trying to reinvigorate at the University of Minnesota the entire program, which was the basis of ag education in the state. Secondly, they came and they put in a program to recruit students. They use scholarships that come out of this money. They use recruitment personnel coming out of these funds. They use they created a 2+2 system with five different institutions in Minnesota, so not only could you only take it at the University of Minnesota, but you could also start at Crookston or South Central or Ridgewater in your area and those kinds of things and continue an ag program for your last 2 years at the University of Minnesota. My point being that as they look at these, one of the other things was try and increase the diversity of people in agricultural education across the state, and that's part of the AFSA effort. The board looks at projects each year, and they identify critical problems for ag education. Another one that they identified was the fact that we were losing teachers. When you get an ag ed degree, it's very easy, as you well know, to go into many other areas, whether it's fertilizer sales or whether it's marketing or working on the Board of Trade or whatever it might be. And we lose teachers because of that. So one of the things that we helped to start was something called the TIP program, which is a teacher induction program to help aid maintaining teachers that are in the field once they start and so forth. And so there's all these different kinds of things, and I could go into many more numerous that I won't today. But it is a problem-solving kind of thing, and it has that connection to the legislature and that six legislators serve on the board. So I'm trying to give you a broad picture of it and kind of also justifying why I think it's important that this committee start taking a look at funding.
So, Mr. Schoenfeld, let me just see if I've got it straight. You started with $1 million a biennium that basically came out of the Ag Special. You're now down to about $700,000 that they still utilize in the Ag Special towards ag education over at the college. What you're asking for, this money would be additional to that, particularly in the areas you're talking about for grants, development monies, other things above and beyond the ag education. You're seeing an erosion of that money that you use out in the
correct
field, basically.
Yes.
Okay. You got something to add?
Well, I
please
guess
do.
I just want to give you
introduce
yes,
yourself.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Julie Tesh. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Agricultural Education Leadership Council. And just talking dollars here, this program right here that you're looking at, the Natural Resource Science Curriculum, is a collaborative effort between ourselves, the Department of Education, and MINSCU. This package alone, obviously not this, but each disc we're providing for each school that has an ag ed program and the online benefits of it, this costs $60,000 to create. And that's not counting the upkeep when standards change and things like that. We have a contract with a company called CART. And so this is just $60,000, and we scraped together a nice sum of money to get that done. Now our animal science curriculum will cost another $60,000. We're also looking at plant science. And then other curriculums we're looking at as well are biofuels, working with Dow on that, and some food technology and some ag economics. So just to give you an aspect of how much a curriculum costs to distribute and not to charge teachers or schools, this was $60,000 just for this one, and so far our pilot projects have been very successful.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, since you brought that up,
Mr. Schoenfeld,
if you don't mind, if I could just mention what this is. These are only examples. Don't get the idea that this is the entire situation.
Sure.
There's over 100 lessons that are in this thing, and there's only a couple of them in here, so it just gives you an example of how it fits into the science standards.
Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairman Junkie, and to the testifiers. I know that I talked to Mr. Schoenfeld when the Ag Special was up before the committee, and I just want to let you know that we put language into the Ag Special that the university is to come back and report on how they use the dollars and what research was done. And I know at that time we talked about the MIL-C funding that is appropriated through the Ag Special, and so I believe that putting that language in there, we can hold the university accountable that the base funding that you have been receiving in the past will continue to be appropriated, and that if we were to appropriate this money in this bill that you have now, it's not going to detract from that base funding. So I would hope that legislators in the future, I believe the university is due to report back in 2009, will be able to rely upon your word at the time when they report back that MIL-C funding was obtained, was held at the level that you'd been receiving in the recent past, and that you still currently receive whatever appropriation we may designate in House File 884.
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up to that, please. Thank you, Representative Welty. Appreciate that very much. I mentioned before that MIL-C is kind of an orphan because it covers many areas, and these funds go to many different areas, not just the University of Minnesota. That's part of the problem, too, because there's no way for us to plug into the University of Minnesota funding stream. Whereas typical, if you're in the College of Agriculture, for instance, in agronomy, you would submit to the university your requests and ultimately might end up in the funding stream. MIL-C is not in that situation because it's a standalone situation, and so I just wanted to make you aware of that, that we don't have an ability to fit into their funding stream very well. And so when this was done, it was done by the legislature, and quite frankly, at the time, the university resisted it.
Okay. Any other questions or comments, members? Representative Otremba, you good to go?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All right. Well, with that, then, we will lay 884 on over for possible consideration in the omnibus bill. Members, I believe our business is done. We'll be taking up more bills starting tomorrow. Committee is adjourned.